sun and gradually deepened into frosted green, which changed in the west into the deep ocean blue. And the Atlantic heaved and sobbed after its turmoil of the day before. Miss Ursula pointed to the gilt-edged clouds in the west and likened them to angels' thrones, which was a pretty conceit. Miss Whittington derived a suggestion of Pentecostal flames from the golden flashes of the seagull's wings. Then she referred to the appetite they would have for breakfast. To this last observation, Miss Ursula did not reply, as she was leaning over the parapet intent on something in the cove below. Presently, she clutched her sister's arm. "Janet, look down there. The black thing, what is it?" Miss Whittington's gaze followed the pointing finger. At the foot of the rocks that edged the gorge sprawled a thing checkered, black and white. "I do believe it's a man."
"A drowned man! Oh, poor fellow! Oh, Janet, how dreadful!"
She turned brown, compassionate eyes on her sister, who continued to peer keenly at the helpless figure below.
"Do you think he's dead, Janet?"
"The sensible thing would be to go down and see," replied Miss Whittington. It was by no means the first dead man cast up by the waves that they had stumbled upon during their long sojourn on this wild coast, where wrecks and founderings and loss of men's lives at sea were commonplace happenings. They were dealing with the sadly familiar, and though their gentle hearts throbbed hard as they made for the gorge and sped quickly down the ragged, rocky path, they set about their task as a matter of course. Miss Ursula reached the sand first and walked over to the body, which lay on a low shelf of rock. Then she turned with a glad cry.
"Janet, he's alive! He's moaning! Come quickly!"
And as Janet joined her,
"Did you ever see such a beautiful face in your life?"
"We should have brought some brandy," said Miss Whittington. But as she bent over the unconscious form, a foolish moisture gathered in her eyes, which had nothing to do with forgetfulness of alcohol. For indeed, there lay sprawling anyhow in cat-like grace beneath them, the most romantic figure of a youth that the sight of maiden ladies ever rested on. He had long black hair, a perfectly chiselled face, a preposterously feminine mouth, which, partly open, showed white young teeth, and the most delicate long-fingered hands in the world. Miss Ursula murmured that he was like a young Greek god. Miss Whittington sighed. The fellow was ridiculous. He was also dank with seawater and moaned as if he were in pain. But as gazing wrapped in wonder and admiration at young Greek gods is not much good to them when they are half drowned, Miss Whittington dispatched her sister in search of help. "The tide is still low enough for you to get round the cliff to the village. Mrs. Penderitt will give you some brandy, and her husband and Luke will bring a stretcher. You might also send Joe Gallo on his bicycle for Dr. Mead." Miss Whittington, as behoved one who has the charge of an orphaned younger sister, did not allow the sentimental to weaken the practical. Miss Ursula, though she would have preferred to stay by the side of the beautiful youth, was docile and went forthwith on her errand. Miss Whittington, left alone with him, rolled up her jacket and pillowed his head on it, brought his limbs into an attitude suggestive of comfort, and tried, by chafing, to restore him to animation. Being unsuccessful in this, she at last desisted, and sat on the rocks nearby, and wondered who on earth he was, and where in the world he came from. His garments consisted in a nondescript pair of trousers and a flannel shirt with a collar, which was fastened at the neck, not by button or stud, but by a tasseled cord, and he was barefoot. Miss Whittington glanced modestly at his feet, which were shapely, and the soles were soft and pink like the palms of his hands. Now, had he been the coarsest and most callosity-stricken shellback half-alive, Janet Whittington would have tended him with the same devotion. But the lingering, though unoffending, Eve in her